Well, it is great to be back for the 288th time, Parish of the Patriots. I'm glad you're here. This is another one of those rare occasions when I'm recording this show on the day of. As you know, I mostly record the show over the weekends. Gives me plenty of time to have everything polished and prepped. I'm recording on the day of the show. I did not get a Daily Nationalist done yesterday. I don't know if any of you noticed or not. I did not. I had a lot of things going on. And thinking about it, I've kind of decided, I haven't finalized that decision, but I'm of a mind that on the times when I'm going to have to record the show on the day of, I may skip doing the Daily Nationalist on Monday. It's hard to do the Daily Nationalist on Monday and then come in and do this show on Tuesday, mostly because all of the content on the first part of the show, I wind up one way or the other covering it on the Daily Nationalist. I have nothing to talk about. So I'm of a mind as such. Speaking of the first part of the show, speaking of the second part of the show, if you're new, this is your first time listening, I appreciate you. I hope you'll stick through this whole thing with me. Give it one try. If at the end you say, this show sucks, you've lost an hour of your time. You're going to find something entertaining in here. I'm just sure of it. I'm confident. There's a reason most people here are returned members of the congregation. We do have a Christian-specific segment of the sermon, if you would. That would be roughly the halfway mark of the show, very roughly the halfway point of the show. Don't turn it off. Give it a shot. Give it a listen. It'll be something different, I think, than maybe what you're used to hearing. If you do get something out of the show, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. We have the ultimate privacy coin. We got snail mail. That address is right there. All that information right here on the description page for the Parish the Patriots. I just do snail mail. Ain't doing no cryptocurrency. I like snail mail. It's simple. It's old-fashioned. Kind of like me. With that having been said, let's get into lay listener supporter mailbag for this week. Jack in Wisconsin, I very much appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Short to the point, and it is good to hear from you. Let's see what we got here. I'm from the Whip Triangle Whip. GPD, hope you had a good Labor Day. Say hello to Sven. I did get to speak to Sven. I don't know if Phil caught that. I talked to him, I believe it was last week, briefly. I was able to talk to him. We're still trying to get some regular lines of communication. He has been moved to what we in the States would call a halfway house. Right now, he's got real severe restrictions, you know, and he's asked to abide by those. But he is doing okay. He's trying to get things sorted out. It's a typical kind of a bureaucratic mess. I'm sorry I can't put an address for you to contact him on. They don't want that information out, and obviously we're going to honor that, but because it would cause problems for the system, for the halfway house, and you know, but he is doing okay, and hopefully as things roll along, some of these restrictions will get lifted. And like I say, right now, the line of communication I have is kind of sketchy, but I did get to hear from him. He is doing okay. I did want to pass that along. And as I said before, I think I brought it up on the Friday Daily Nationalist, but I mean, one of the things he really emphasized to me when I did get to speak with him was how much it meant to him to get, you know, to receive all the notes and the cards, the Christmas cards and such. And it really, really, it was humbling, and he really appreciated it. Tony, no, but I did get it. Thank you, Tony. Very much appreciate it. And finally, Mr. T, coming through once again, GPD, do for the show. I appreciate les do for les show. It does mean a lot. I thank all of you. It's always nice getting a little feedback, knowing, because if the show sucked, you wouldn't, you know. It's nice to know, it's a little positive feedback. Now, as I talked about on the Friday, I briefly mentioned the Friday Daily Nationalist. It's like they're just recycling the same crap. There's nothing new. Nothing new under the sun. They're recycling. It's 2016 all over again without the entertainment factor. Their Team D is recycling all their crap from 2016. I guess they're counting on people having a short attention span. I don't know. Well, like I spoke about on the Friday Daily National Show, they're recycling Russian meddling in the election to try to get Trump in there. It's amazing to me because they put forth this candidate that has like zero actual support, even from Democrats. I don't know why that is. Maybe it's kind of part of a humiliation ritual. They're going to put somebody in there that they know nobody likes. I don't know. Because they could have gone with that guy from California, Newsom, and it would have been more plausible than running this person. But they are, they're bringing back Russian meddling and Russian interference in the election. Everybody that argues with the official narrative is a Russian, is a Putin stooge, a Russian agent, Russian meddling in the election. They're trying to influence people, whatever that means. And since they're recycling this, and I can guarantee, and I'm already seeing hints of this, the next thing they're going to whip up, you can go ahead, you can screen cap this. They're going to bring back white supremacists. I can guarantee you, expect in the next coming weeks or months, you're going to have all of your federal agents wearing their masks. Somebody says, how come these white supremacists are wearing these masks out here? I said, that's so they don't get identified as federal agents. They're hiding their identity as federal agents. I guarantee you, you're going to have all of these white supremacist federal agent groups out here getting for photo ops. Mark my words, they're going to bring this back. Because you see, the average Democrat voter, for all of their faults, they're not real big on this whole Israel genociding the Palestinian things. And Harris has come out for some unbeknownst reason. For some unknown reason, all of our presidential candidates have to come out and swear allegiance to Israel. It's a complete mystery. Well, because of the way the system works, she's had to come out and swear allegiance to Israel and their quote-unquote right to defend themselves. Well, the average Democrat voter isn't real big on the ethnic cleansing, the genocide of the Palestinians. And so, because they're trying to create some sort of plausible deniability here, some sort of plausible scenario where she wins, and when they have the core of their support doesn't agree with her swearing allegiance to Israel because they're in the middle of killing all these Palestinians, they're going to have something else to wave in front of their supporter, in front of their base. Orange man bad isn't enough when she's standing up there swearing to continue to support Israel. So what to do? You're going to have to bring up the white supremacists. The white supremacists, they're coming for you. You're going to stop our democracy values of who we are. Look at them. I guarantee you, get ready for the photo ops. Get ready. I'll be out there waving the swastika flags and all of the rest of it. Johnny on the spot. I guarantee it. Get ready for it. They got to distract from their supporters not being happy about the Palestinians getting slaughtered. So they got to give them another boogeyman. Got to get there, get them quit looking at this undying support for Israel that, again, for some mysterious reason, don't go asking questions or noticing how come all the candidates are having to swear allegiance to Israel. So they got to give them a boogeyman to look at, and they're going to whip up this white supremacist. You got to whip up the white supremacist. Count on it. Trust me, it's coming. You're going to see it. It's supposed to be the big debate tonight. It's Tuesday. It's supposed to be Trump-Harris having their debate. I doubt I'll watch it. I don't know. I did wind up watching bits of Trump and Biden, which was entertaining because we got to see the full dimension. It was nice. It was somewhat vindicating for all of us who had been saying for a long time, this guy doesn't know whether he's horseback or foot. And the media dismissing us as all crazy conspiracy theorists. So this guy's sharp as a tack. And then he rolls out there and the medication wasn't enough. And we saw dementia Joe Biden. I don't really care about this. You know, I hate election years because it's just the same stupid stuff. It's kind of disturbing, you know, that people are so stupid they keep falling for the same. You know, it's the same thing. I guess there's people out there who are going to buy into Russian meddling in the election again. Just like they'll fall for the threat of the evil white supremacists again. I don't know. I don't care. because it's the same old thing. I probably won't watch it. I'll just catch the sound bites the next day. If I don't have anything going on, I may catch a few sound bites just to see how it goes. But I don't care. I mean, why would anyone care? Trump says he's going to do everything he can for Israel. Harris says she's going to do everything she can for Israel. Why do people think anything's going to change here? I mean, where are they setting the difference? Speaking of the whole Israel thing, isn't it something? They've used this narrative for a minute now, that this is all about October 7th and Hamas. See, it's about Hamas. They sit there and say they don't mean to be slaughtering all of these people, even though they do. Bombing convoys, bombing hospitals and schools. It's because of Hamas. And now they're attacking the West Bank. For those who may not know, Hamas is not in the West Bank. That has nothing to do with Hamas. They've just started bombing their hospitals over there, too. Same place. But they haven't explained that. And, of course, the media doesn't ask. You don't need to worry about that. I was thinking the other day about U.S.'s, talking about foreign policy. In U.S.'s foreign policy, because a lot of people don't ever understand the ties. You know, they say, well, I don't care about foreign policy. I want to know about my life here. But they are interrelated. And as the U.S. government continues to lose the ability to project power to these other countries, that's going to diminish their power here on a long enough time scale. These other countries, you know, I was saying, I was liking this other day. Y'all ever play Texas Hold'em? I used to play Texas Hold'em, you know, just for entertainment. I'm not a big gambler, but I like playing Texas Hold'em. I haven't done it in years, but it's a fun game to play. If y'all ever played Texas Hold'em, it's a form of poker where a certain amount of cards are out on the table. You have a certain amount of cards that you hold and hide in your hand, and you make your bets, and they're turning cards. And you finally wind up with that last card. And the U.S.'s foreign policy is basically a game of Texas Hold'em, and they're waiting to turn that last card over. Now, it's my belief that the U.S. is largely, and I think it's becoming more and more obvious, they're bluffing. I'm not going to say they don't have a hand. I believe they have a very weak hand. They're running on prestige, you know. It's like a fighter. It's like a prize fighter who was just in his prime. Nobody could beat this guy. But now he's like old. But, you know, he's running on. He's just threatening everybody on his past record. The U.S.'s past record, to be very generous, is somewhat exaggerated, to say the least. The U.S. has a very weak hand. You know, they have a hand, but it's getting weaker every day. And they have no choice. They keep, the way they've operated is, and again, in poker, you know, you just keep raising. Maybe you don't have a very good hand. But the idea is you keep raising and you convince everybody else that you hold all the cards. That guy, pretty soon the people across the table are thinking, man, the way this guy's pushing bets in, you know, he must have a straight flush or something, you know. He must have a heck of a hand. He's sitting over there. He's got a pair of twos. But you don't know that. But he's bluffing you. And the idea is he keeps pushing in the bets. And everybody else folds. He wins because everybody else eventually says, man, I can't push in any further. And they all fold. And you win by default. That's the way it works. It's becoming ever more clear, I think, on the world stage that the U.S. is bluffing. And these other countries are becoming more aware that it's a bluff because fewer of them are folding. You see this doubling down on these sanctions. These sanctions have been destructive more for the U.S. than anyone else and for their vassal states. And yet they just keep doubling down. They just keep pushing another bet in. Add up some more hostility. You saw this with the Ukraine thing. They said, well, we're not going to let the Ukrainians attack the Russians across the border. Well, then it was, well, yeah, they can. Well, we're not going to send them tanks. Well, yeah, we are. And people refer to it as escalation. But what they're really doing is they're pushing more chips in. They need the other side to fold. That they keep making a bigger bet and nobody's folding. Now, it's not necessarily surprising that big players, such as Russia and China, you know, they're staying at the table. What is interesting to me is a lot of the smaller gamblers are still sitting at the table too. Now you've got countries like Venezuela and others, you know, of course, North Korea. And they're not folding either. More of these countries are starting to call the bluff. Now you keep pushing in. You know, you keep raising the bet. And these other countries, so far, are not raising the bet. They're simply calling, you see. It comes around, because the way it works, you're waiting on that last card to flip over in Texas Hold'em. And it comes to you. You're the U.S. And you sit there and you're bluffing. You're sitting on a pair of twos. And you raise. And see, then it goes around to everyone else on the table. And they're calling. They're not folding. They're calling. They're shoving in the same amount of chips. I call. Everybody, I call, I call, I call. Well, now it comes around to you. Are you going to call? And now you have to lay your cards on the table. Well, the U.S. can't lay their cards on the table because they got a damn pair of twos. So they raise again. And then it goes around the table again. But everybody keeps calling. It's going around. I can just picture the U.S. as a nervous poker player sitting there with a pair of twos, sweat starting to show up on their forehead. Because now they've pushed in so many chips, and this is the problem. This is the inherent problem with bluffing on a poker hand. Because you can do this so long, but the longer you go in, you've got no choice now but to stay in. You know, people sit around, they say they're waiting for maybe the U.S. will back off. They can't. See, in a poker, if you start bluffing, you know, when that round goes two or three times around, now you've already pushed so many chips in that you yourself, you'll lose your ass if you call now and let the cards be laid on the table. They got no choice but to keep raising the bet. They're just hoping somebody else will fold. Somebody. And fewer people are folding. There was a time not that long ago when everybody would have just simply folded. They didn't want. It was too risky. They had folded. Fewer and fewer of these countries are folding now. The U.S. is in a position, they got no choice but to keep raising the bet and hoping somebody will fold. They need these other players at the table to start folding. You know, if they could get the big players to fold, that would be great. But right now, little players like North Korea, they ain't folding. You look at Kim Jong-un, he look like the kind of guy going to fold? No, Kim, it don't matter if Kim got one chip left on the table, he going to push it in. He's in. He's in. He's got cojones of steel. He's in. He's in no matter what. Iranians, they're not folding. Hell, the Venezuelans aren't folding. They're doing their threats. They threaten the regime change. They threaten this and threaten that, and they just keep calling. They just keep calling. Everybody keeps calling. U.S. is so and so deep. They've piled up so many chips, they can't afford to call. Because everybody's going to see they got a pair of twos. Everybody's going to see it's a bluff. Everybody's getting that feeling. The turning point, as I said before, these other countries right now, they're just satisfied to keep calling. You know, keep calling. You don't see Russia escalating with the Ukraine thing. They always react, don't they? You know, a lot of people get frustrated with that. Man, why does Russia just keep, they just react. The U.S. escalates and they react. They're just calling. The turning point will be, because the U.S. got, like I said, the U.S. got no choice but to keep raising because they're bluffing and they've been bluffing long enough now. They're locked in. You know, they're locked in. The only play they have left is to keep raising the bet and hoping somebody will fold. But their chips are not infinite. You know, before 20 years ago, it appeared that the U.S. had infinite chips, so this worked. But now it's becoming more and more apparent that they do not have infinite chips. Their chip pile is starting to get small, and people know it. People know it. They get real low, and they maneuver some stuff around, and the lady comes over and hands him some more chips. But now that chip pile getting smaller. The turning point will be, this is in a poker game. If you're watching this going on at a poker table. You know you've hit the turning point when the U.S. raises again, and one of the players, instead of calling, he calls, and before they move it, he says, "And I'll raise you this much." That's the turning point. This is the point where you know no one's going to, you know, this person, at least this player, is not going to fold. This player is not going to fold. When that player not only calls your raise, but then raises himself, now things are completely different. Now they're saying, "I'm in." And if the others continue to stay in as well, now the bluff is over. It's all over but the crying. The official bluff call is when the other players say, "I'll see your bet and I'll raise you this much more." At some point, look for that to happen. Again, the U.S. isn't going to call. They can't. They have a weak hand, and everybody will see their weak hand. They'll see their pair of twos for what it is. So the U.S. has got no choice here. They keep pushing in, and right now everybody's just reacting to what they do. "Well, you're doing this, and we'll do this. You do this with it," but they're just calling. They're just calling. But at some point, the other side will raise the bet. That's when the word is officially out. That's the way you tell somebody, "I think you're bluffing," without telling them, "I think you're bluffing. I'll call and I'm raising again." And now the U.S. sitting there looking at their chips going, "Oh, shit. They just raised on me. Now I have to react, you see. Now I've got to react to them raising." I'm probably wearing the analogy out, but you get the point. Now, why is this a good thing? Because while we're talking about foreign policy and we're talking about nations, Russia, China, North Korea, Iran, whoever, sitting at the poker table, as their ability to do this, and I said this on a recent show, as their ability to do this, it will play out here. At some point, as they're diminished on the world stage, their ability to project power overseas diminishes. Pretty soon, at some point in time, they have to leave that table. You know, so they're sitting at this high stakes table. Well, now they, at some point you lose all your chips, but you still playing poker. So you have to go over here to the low stakes table. And now instead of sitting across the table from Russia, China, North Korea, Iran, they're sitting across the table from their own states. They're sitting across the table from Nevada and Texas and in different states that are starting to go, "We don't want to be a part of this either." And they're going to have a whole lot fewer chips to play with. It will play out here. I believe that. I don't have any super grand insight. That's the way I see it playing out. That's the way I view it. This has to take place for things to change domestically. Things aren't going to change under this regime, under this system, under this government. You're not going to wind up with, "Oh, we've got a different country now, still unified and being ruled by Yankee land, by Washington, D.C. You're going to have this whole break apart thing going. But for any of that to take place, for change domestically to take place, they've got to exhaust themselves on the world stage. And that's what you're seeing right now. You know, this is why it matters. You say, "Well, then that foreign policy." It does. It matters for us here. As we watch them exhaust themselves on the world stage, it means exhausting themselves here too. It means you getting closer to some kind of real change in this ever more increasingly absurd and ridiculous system that we have here. Again, when you see this stuff, when you read about this stuff, and it's like, why do these other countries just keep reacting? You know, they sit around, they let the U.S. escalate. Well, now we're going to let Zelensky bomb Moscow with our missiles, but we're not involved. That's just the U.S. continuing to raise. The other players are satisfied right now with calling. You know, watch. At some point in time, one of these other players is going to raise the bet, and that's the official bluff call. That's when things are going to get really interesting. We got to keep on rolling. We're going to go ahead and get into the Christian-specific segment. It's the part I always look forward to. Hopefully you do too. So we're just going to keep on rolling. Y'all know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon at the Parish of the Patriots. Now, this week, we may get a chance to get into several things. I know I say that, gosh, it seems like every week. And most of the time, we get so in-depth on a topic that doesn't happen, and we just kind of stay on one topic. But we may. We may have a chance to get into several things this week. I don't know or not. I wanted to get into something I read recently, just some rando post on the internet by an atheist, Spurg. And the reason I want to get into this is because the fallacy here is also one that in times of a trial in faith, I've seen actual believers fall into the same sort of trap, you know, the same sort of mistake, so as to speak. And the quote was something along the line of this. In fact, it's almost just word for word. I read the Bible. I tried to follow all the rules as best I could. And I prayed to this God and nothing happened. So, God is fake. He's not real. I read the Bible. I followed all the rules and I prayed and nothing happened. God didn't do anything. So, as a result, this means God is fake. Now, as believers, we can kind of snicker at those sort of statements. But again, the reason I bring this up is because when one's faith is tried, oftentimes I've seen professed believers kind of fall into that same trap, right? Maybe not in quite such a simplistic matter, but at the core of the matter, they fall into that same trap. So let's pull this apart. Let's take this quote and go through it line for line and start talking about some of the fallacies here. First off, I laugh when I read somebody like this and they say, I've read the Bible. And my first reaction is, no, you haven't. I mean, people just lie. And when they're obvious lies, I mean, I'm sorry. I just can't. I've read the Bible. No, you haven't. 90% of the time when somebody, especially an atheist, Spurg mouths off and says, I've read the Bible. No, they have not. Look at how thick this thing is. I've been seeking the Lord the better part of my, well, more than 50 plus years of life on this earth. And I, in actuality, I've probably read the entirety of the Bible, guessing here, at most around four times. And I say roughly, I've read through it from beginning to end twice, deliberately, just starting the book of Genesis and reading there. I've done that twice. I give myself credit for the other two because I read entire books here and there. I'm currently officially going through another read through. This time I'm reading books from the Old Testament, beginning at the beginning, and from the New Testament, actually, funny enough, from the end to the beginning on the New Testament. So when somebody says, I've read the Bible, no, I can guarantee you they haven't. And even this, I have devoted years and years to this. And every time I read something, I can usually get something new out of it. Most of the time when you hear this from somebody, they probably haven't read more than a single book of the Bible. Maybe a few chapters. They usually are familiar with the handful of lines. And they profess this means they've read the Bible. Now, it bears pointing out, reading and understanding. Why does this matter? I guess here's a better way to come at this. Why does this matter? Let me make a quote to you. That's just for a moment, clear your mind. And pretend you don't know anything about the Bible. You don't know anything about it. You say, tell me something. Read something from your religious book. And I open the book and I read the shortest line, the shortest verse in the entire Bible. I looked at you and I said, I'm reading from the Bible now. Okay. And I read, Jesus wept. And I closed the Bible. And then I looked at you and say, now, do you understand? Well, your reaction would be, what? Well, no. I mean, of course I don't understand. What are you talking about? What does this mean? Wept about what? Who is this person? What does any of this mean? What would you say? You would say, you're going to need to, for me to understand it, you're going to need to read to me what's leading up to this, right? You're going to have to give me some background. You're going to have to read what led up to this statement so I understand what the statement means. To which I would respond, you're right. So let's go ahead and get into Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. You see, when somebody would say, if somebody were to say, you're going to have to read what's leading up to this, they're thinking a paragraph or two beforehand so they can get the gist of it. But you can't just get the gist of it. You're right. You've got to read what comes before. So we're going to start at Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, right? You've got to read all of it that comes before it to even have a chance to start understanding it. And even then, you have to work at it, a lifetime of work. I mean, that's what it is. So what it means, you're going to tell me the context. You're right. And to have the context, you're going to read the whole thing. Not a few chapters, not a few verses before it and get the gist of it. You got to read. The whole thing is bound together in one book for a reason. Now, the next statement. I did my best to follow all the rules. And again, my response is the same. No, you didn't. Specifically, what rules are you even talking about? I mean, what? Are you recognizing all of the Sabbath days? I mean, are you particular about what sort of animals you eat? I mean, what rules? I followed all the rules. What? No, you didn't. Well, because I don't even know what rules you're talking about. You're talking about the basics of the Ten Commandments? What? I followed all the rules. Okay, even if that were true, well, good, there's the basic minimum. I mean, if you're going to define the rules the most simplistic manner and say the Ten Commandments, you know, well, congratulations, you haven't murdered anybody. You haven't stolen anything. Woo! Let's throw a parade for you. You've done such a good job. You haven't murdered or killed anybody. I mean, what are you celebrating here? Are you doing the basics? You know, does a soldier get a medal because they did the very basic of what they were ordered to do? And then, of course, the final, and this is the rub. I prayed to God and nothing happened. And this is where I say, again, the reason I wanted to talk about this is because this is a lot of times you can see where actual believers fall into a variation of this same silly trap that the atheist will fall into a lot of times in a time of grief. I don't understand. Well, it says here in the Bible, if we pray over the sick and they'll be healed. And my loved one was sick and I prayed to them. I prayed to God every day. And I've been following these rules and I've been going to church and I prayed every day. And you know what? They still got worse. Their health still declined and they still died. God didn't do anything. It says here, if I pray over the sick, they're going to be healed. Never says that people still aren't going to get old. They're still not going to die. Not to mention, though, there's places in there specific instructions for those specific people telling them what to go out and do. Now, if we set aside for the moment and say, all of it is true. You read the Bible. You did your best to follow all the rules, whatever all of the rules means. And you prayed to God and nothing happened. And so God isn't real or you're not doing your faith right, depending on who you are in the context of this. Now, what really struck me about this, as the more I thought about it, is this comes back to the entire book of Job, which is my current, where I'm at currently reading in the Old Testament. This is the entire, this whole thing. You see, the answers are in there. You just don't know where they are a lot of times. This is why it's an ongoing study. But the answers are already in there. You just have to find it. This whole entire thing, the mindset. And again, my focus really here is on believers who fall into the trap. Why isn't God answering my prayers? I'm going through this hard time and I prayed and I went to church and I put money in the offering plate and I followed the rules and I prayed and God didn't do anything. Why? Tell me why. It's in the book of Job. It's answered. This whole mindset right here we're talking about is covered in the book of Job. The whole back and forth they're saying it is centered around this belief that if you read the Bible, if you follow the rules, then God is going to bless you. If you don't do these things, God is going to curse you. And you have the entire, basically, for all most purposes, the vast majority of the book is this back and forth between Job and his friends. Job is saying, I don't understand. Because Job is basically coming at it from this belief as well. This mindset that if you follow the rules, then God's going to reward you. If you follow the rules and pray, God is going to reward you. This simplistic binary thinking. You do good, God blesses. You do bad, God curses. If you're having a really, really bad time, as Job was an extreme example of this, then you must have done something really bad. His friends show up and they begin having this back and forth argument. You're not admitting what you've done wrong. Look, we know how this works. If you're wicked, if you do evil things, then God brings evil on you. If you do good things, if you're a righteous man, God blesses you. You're going to be rich. You're going to have a nice family. Everything is going to go your way. Obviously, we can see things are catastrophic for you right now, Job. So just tell us, what did you do? You need to repent of it. You need to pray to God to forgive you for all the awful, wicked, evil things. The discussion degenerates to the point where they just start making stuff up. You stole from the widow. It's like, no, we didn't. This is a comforting thing. Because if God is really simple, and if you do this and follow the rules, he blesses your life. That's a nice, simple thing. A nice, easy thing to understand. Because if that is not the context, if that is not the way it works, if there's more to God than the simple binary thinking of you follow rules, God bless you. If you do bad, God punishes you. If all there is to God is this very simplistic, binary, childish way of operating, then that makes it easy, and we like easy. You do good, God gives you a piece of candy. You do bad, God spanks your behind. See, so you're not children. There's more to the Lord than this. But this entire, and it's comforting. It's comforting. Because if that is not the way it is, as was in the case with Job, if the reality is you can do everything right, you can lead an upright life, you can lead a righteous life, you can quote unquote follow all the rules, and calamity can still befall you. If you can do everything right and evil can still fall upon you and your house, that means it could happen to anybody, right? So you want to have that mindset. That way, as long as you're doing the right thing, everything's going to be good. If evil and calamity can fall upon you and your house, even if you try to do everything right, even if you quote unquote follow all of the rules, then that means it could happen to anybody. I said this, I brought this up, I think, on a previous one of these discussions. Job's friends start off in this discussion comforting Job, but it quickly degenerates, and it degenerates because they go from trying to comfort Job to trying to comfort themselves. Trying to comfort themselves over the idea, if he has done everything right, if he has quote unquote followed all the rules and this still happened to him, then it can still happen to me. Are you telling me that I can read the Bible and follow all the rules and bad things can still happen to me? Yes. People don't want to hear that. People want to, if people look upon somebody who's having a really hard time, who a great calamity has fallen upon, that what they want to hear is how that's not going to happen to them. They want to reassure themselves, that's not going to happen to me. It's terrifying. The very idea, they're looking at Job. Job was in such bad shape that when they showed up, they couldn't speak for a week. They just didn't have any words. It was so bad. If he could have done everything right and this still happened, then his three friends are sitting there thinking, then what about me? This could happen to me. Even though their back and forth discussion is about Job, it's really from their friend's perspective, it's about themselves, because they don't want that to happen to them. You telling me you did everything right and this happened. There's no way. If you followed all of the rules, this wouldn't have happened to you. When we read in the New Testament, one of the things the early church struggled with, as the apostles had gone out now, and they've begun starting the work of building, you know, the early church. And one of the things they ran into early on, problem-wise, is people wanted to turn it back. They wanted to turn it into rule following. They started the whole thing of, well, these are the laws from Moses. We got to start doing this. And that was one of the things they had to deal with. People tried to turn it into, here's a book of rules. People like that. You know, it is. It's human nature. People like a book of rules. If you follow everything on the list, then you're good. You know? It's simple. You look, here's your list of things that you are and are not allowed to do. And as long as you stick with the list, you're golden. You got your ticket punched. Nothing else matters. And sadly, it's still a problem today. I don't know how many times I've heard Christian believers, and when they start talking about their faith, you know, and how they follow the Lord, you quickly come to understand that they're rule following. They have created, in their mind, they have created a list of rules that they are going to follow. You know, a list of rules, and if I do these things, you know, if I don't use these particular words, if I don't do these particular things, then I'm good to go. And when I stumble and do these particular things, then I've kind of fallen out of grace with God, and I've got to make up for that. I've got to tell him I'm sorry and try not to do that again. It's funny because, you know, growing up, the different Protestant denominations all had their pet things, you know. They did. They had their pet peeves. You know, the Baptists were hard against smoking. Don't you be smoking. Much less drinking. The Church of Christ, they didn't believe. They had a passage they read out of the Bible, and they didn't believe in using any kind of, you know, certain musical instruments in the church. Those are forbidden. Those are verboten. You can't do that. Oh, they had their pet peeves. Their rules, which were the most important rules, you can't do these things. Got to follow these rules. People fall into that same trap because it's easy. It's easy. They want it spelled out. If you do these things, everything's good. If you don't do these things, then you're going to have a hard time. And of course, this is always going to lead to problems in faith. This is with Job's friends. Because at the end of the day, when you create your list of rules that you've now defined as your faith and how you follow God, you've made your rule list. At some point in time, it's not going to matter. You know, bad things are going to happen. And then, where's your faith? If your faith is defined as, I followed these rules and bad things happened. Now, we know in the case of Job, God had a whole lot of other thing going on here. There was things unbeknownst to any of them going on in the background. You know, complicated things. The Lord's plans are like that. They're complicated. You know, God has complicated plans. He's going to tell you. Most of God's plans, and I've probably said this before. I probably say a lot of things before, and it bothers me. Because I don't ever want y'all to listen to this and be like, man, he's just saying the same thing. A lot of actual, like, God's will. And let me tell you something. Because it wears me out. How evangelicals, everything is God's will in my life. Let me tell you, the vast majority of things, I don't care who you are, me, you, anybody. The vast majority of things in your life have nothing to do with God's will. That's just your life. You're making your decisions, you're exercising your free will, and sometimes you get good results, sometimes you get bad results, sometimes other people make decisions that have nothing to do with you, and they affect your life. That's how it is. It has nothing to do with God's will. Now, if there are things that are a part of God's will, and by God's will, I mean his larger plans, just as Job and his friends couldn't understand the bigger things that God had going on behind the scenes. You know, God's larger plan, things that go beyond just you, things that go beyond what you're concerned about in your life. God's not micromanaging your life. I hate to tell you, you're responsible for it yourself. But God does have bigger things going on in the background. And if you happen to be playing a role in that, the vast majority of God's will, God's plans being carried out, are carried out in a manner in such that because he exists outside of time, he already foresees, he can already look and see the different free will decisions other people are making, and his plan falls into place amongst all of that. It's one of the things that is so grand about the Lord that it's hard to wrap your mind around, being able to foresee. Everybody has free will. He's not making the decisions for them to get the result he wants. But he can just foresee everything laid out on the table, where those things are going to fall together, and his will gets placed in there, and it's carried out. It's beyond, almost beyond human understanding, being able to see things on such a vast and grand scale and having to actually, being able to actually carry out a plan. Now, there's certain times in the Bible where his people, because, again, he doesn't take their free will away, where their decisions all, it's like a video game. No matter what decisions you make, you're going to get the bad end. You know, one of those examples is Peter being delivered out of the prison. The reason the angel was sent to take him out of the prison was because everybody involved in that, making their free will decisions, was going to lead to Peter gets killed. Well, God's plan was Peter needed to go on and do the work of establishing the church. So God did intercede directly. He didn't take anyone's free will away. He sent an angel in to physically remove him from the prison because that was one of those rare times that everybody's free will working together. It didn't matter. There was a dead end there. Peter gets executed. You do the, these people decide to do this, that, or the other. Peter gets executed. You're getting the same end. That's one of those rare times where God interceded directly. Whether or not you can make your car payment this month does not reach that level. I'm sorry, it doesn't. We get so inward focused on our own concerns and our own lives, and we act like our problems are God's problems. And if I just pray harder, if I just follow the rules harder, God's going to make my car payment for me. And when that doesn't happen, then there's a problem. Then there's a problem with God. As long as you're viewing God as a set of rules that you have to follow, you're missing it. You understand what I'm saying. I'm not saying the law doesn't exist. This is something people, I don't know, maybe they have a hard time wrapping their minds around. It's not to say the law doesn't count. I've, again, heard Christian believers, some of these churches basically say, well, the law doesn't, that doesn't mean anything anymore because we have Jesus, which means we can do whatever we want to. It's not. Jesus said specifically, I haven't come to do away with the law. Walking in faith, walking in your faith, means before you know it, you're more or less, if you were to go back and start looking at some of these quote-unquote rules, you're actually voluntarily following because that's what you want to do. Rules imposed from the outside are arbitrary. They're restrictions, and it's something you're just making yourself do. Walking in the Lord and growing your faith means that you look up one day and you're actually kind of already doing all those things just simply because you want to, and that's what it's supposed to be. It's a lot easier to do something you want to do than something being imposed on you, isn't it? If you want to do those things, it's easy. Nobody has to force you, right? That's how all of that, the law and whatnot, is supposed to kind of fit in. That's what it means to have it written on your heart. You're doing it because you want to do it. Now, getting kind of reeling things back in. As with Job and his friends, if the reality is you can follow all of the rules and bad things happen anyway, it means it could happen to anybody. That's scary. We want a simplicity. We want things to be easy. This is where faith comes in. And of course, what? Your faith or deeds? Your faith is the actions that you take. There's a John Wayne quote that I like, and you can apply it to faith. And it's from a John Wayne movie. You know, and one of the young guys tells the Duke, you know, I don't have courage like you. I'm afraid. And John Wayne looks at him in this movie and he says, courage. He says, courage, being brave. Courage is when you're scared to death, but you saddle up anyway. You're scared to death, but you saddle your horse anyway. That's faith. Faith is not, I feel like God is going to take care of everything. The Lord, I'm in the Lord's hands, and the Lord is going to take care of everything, and I feel comforted. Sometimes the Spirit will comfort you. There's nothing wrong with that. But that's not your faith. Faith is when it's like courage. Faith is when you're scared to death, but you saddle up anyway. Faith is when you've done your best. Things are still going south, but you're going to get up today and you're going to do your best anyway. Faith is when you understand that things happen in this life. You can do everything right and things still happen. Negative things still happen, but you still believe anyway. You still get up and you still do the things of the Lord. You live your life for the Lord. You try to understand Him a little more today. It's hard. It's not. Having faith is not, I'm confident everything's going to be fine. Having faith is everything inside of you says things are not fine. Faith is, well, everything inside of me is saying, you know, things are going south no matter what I do. God has forgotten all about me. But you get up and you serve the Lord today anyway. You walk the best you can. You try to understand Him a little more today anyway. Even with all these things, your emotions going all over the place, you get up and you do it anyway. That's faith. You take that action every day. You know, do your best. Even though maybe you're feeling it's not emotion. Somebody recently asked me, you know, what's the basis of your faith? Yeah, where you talk about this faith. Where does it come from? What do you base that on? It's not a bad question. And my answer to that is a lifetime of experience. A lifetime of putting in this effort, a lifetime of trying to understand God. And when I don't understand, accepting that I just don't understand. And later, you do wind up understanding it. There are a lot of things. If you asked me 20 years ago, I wouldn't know half of this and that. It's an ongoing. When you put in the effort, God will reward you with the knowledge of Him. When you seek Him, that's what Jesus said, seek and you will find. But it's an ongoing, you got to seek it all the time. You're not going to, not right away. He didn't say you're going to find it right away. Seek and you will find. Your faith is a lifelong effort. Don't be discouraged when you don't understand it right now. You're just not there yet. Keep putting in the effort. And what you do is years later, you realize that thing that years ago you didn't understand. Now you do. And it's in a lot of ways, it's like that was so simple. Why did I not get that back then? Well, you just weren't there yet. The more you try to, the more you put in the effort to understand and know God, He will answer that. You know, hey. I'm not saying you're going to hear a voice from heaven, but I am saying you get to know Him. And when you get to know, you know, if you think of somebody in your family, you've known your, say your parents or you have a sibling and you've known them your entire life. If somebody came up to you and said, well, how do you know them? And you'd be like, well, I've known them my whole life. That's my brother. That's my sister. you know, I've known this person my entire life. I mean, I know basically more or less everything about them. I know the way they think. I know the way they do things. I know the way they reason through things. It's like that with the Lord. The longer you spend trying to get to know him, trying to understand him, he responds, seek and you will find, knock and the door will be open. He reveals himself to you and you come to understand him. So when people say, well, how do you know? It's like, well, God has told me, God has shown me. I mean, doesn't mean you had a vision. Doesn't mean you heard a literal voice from heaven. It just means you've come to understand. He's revealed it to you. You tried to understand it 20 years ago, you didn't get it, but well, now you do. Well, where did that come from? Well, he revealed it to you. As you put in the effort, those efforts were rewarded. He revealed you. Now you understand him. So when people say, well, where do you get this faith from? Well, it's because I understand him, just like you would understand your brother or sister that you knew your whole life, because you know who they are. The more you understand God, you understand who he is. You understand, you get a better idea of how he operates and how he does the things that he does. So from this comes confidence. And from that, your faith gets easier. It gets stronger. Now, I want to finish up with a final point, which is kind of related, kind of not, but it does fall into the category to a certain extent of faith. God's will. And again, I hear people sometimes they'll obsess about God's will, prophecy, and I'm going to lump in also God's will with that. People get obsessed with prophecy. Prophecy and God's will, for the most part, are meant to be understood in hindsight. You know, you look back. There's things in my life that I know were God's will. It was part of God's bigger plan. I say this with all humility. These discussions we have, and I really want to be careful I say this, because I want to be clear that I say this from humility and not from pride or any kind of boasting of myself. These discussions that we have, and it's made clear when I get feedback from y'all that you get something out of these discussions that we have, I do believe that this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And in this matter, it's God's will. I'm not trying to sound grand or important but I do. I do believe that this is God's will. But yet I look back over my life and various things. You remember we talked about earlier about how God's will is all these different people making their own independent free will decisions, and yet it all fits together. And at the end, what God wants to happen works out. I look back, and so many various things had to happen for me to be here, you know, having these discussions with you. You know, so many things had to happen for this to take place. You know, that when I was going through those things, I didn't understand that. It just seemed like a bunch of crazy stuff going on, or maybe I was doing this, that, or whatever. You know, some of those things were sinful things that I had partaken in. And yet, even those things, yes, even sins can fall into a piece, you know, make things fall into place. But you don't understand that when you're going through it, is my point. So sometimes, even though you're going through something, it may, I'm not saying it is, but it is possible that those things are going to mean that at some point in your life, they're going to play a role, that at some point in your life, you're where you need to be to do something that is a part of God's will. Prophecy is the same way. Prophecy is made and you look at it in hindsight and go, oh, wow, that was the fulfillment of that prophecy. And thus, you know, that was a part of God's will being carried out. The people when Jesus is going around healing the sick, raising the dead, making the blind see, and they're like, what's going on here? Because they didn't understand prophecy while it was happening, and that's a common thing. But we look back and we look at the whole context of the entirety of the Bible, and we say, obviously, this was the Messiah. This was the Son of God come to this earth to bring salvation. You know, it's understood in hindsight. Don't be discouraged if you don't understand God's will going, because what you got going on right now If it's a part of God's will, you're going to understand that in hindsight. You're not going to understand it right now. If it's a part of God's will, then you'll understand it later. You'll look back and go, wow, I'm here where I'm supposed to be, doing what I'm supposed to do. Because all of these other things happened. I made these decisions. Other people made decisions. And I wound up here. And the only way I would have wound up, if you removed one or two of those decisions, I'd be in a whole nother place doing something entirely different. And yet here I am. It works that way. It's understood in hindsight. Don't get obsessed with looking around your life and go, I don't understand. I don't understand why God's will, what's going on in my life right now. Well, probably because you're not where you're supposed to be yet. It might be a part of what's going to put you where you need to be next year, 5 years from now, 20 years from now. Or it may not have anything to do with it at all. It may just be you're in a rough patch. Life happens. It just is what it is. God's will, as far as his actual overall plan, is going to be carried out. If he has to send an angel to break you out of prison, he will do that to accomplish what he plans to do. Otherwise, his will be carried out one way or the other. You don't have to worry about God's will. And look, I need to wrap up. But look, the more these experiences you go through, the more you're going to understand God. The more you understand God, the stronger your faith is going to be. And again, that's demonstrated by it's going to be easier for you to keep moving forward and taking action. You just keep building and building on your knowledge of the Lord and moving forward. You know, I mean, the more experience, the more XP you gain, the more you're going to be able. Okay, it's like a video game. When you first start, you're not going to go to the end. You jump forward to the end of the game and defeat the boss monster. You got to go through the whole game, right? You got to go play through the whole game, build up your XP, pick up your armaments, your items, boost your magical power, level up your character. Then at the end of the game, you got everything you need to take on the boss monster. That's how your faith is. You know, you might just be a level. Don't get discouraged. You may just be a level 3 character right now in your video game of life. I'm getting off topic. You might just be that right now. Just keep building it. That is the basis of your faith. A lifetime of experience that you're building right now. My faith is weak. You're working on your faith is what you choose to do today. You're working on it right now, or hopefully you are, as long as you don't give up and you keep putting in the work. That is your faith. Not this feeling that you have, this feeling of discouragement and everything's not going to be fine and this feeling of turmoil. That has nothing to do. Has nothing to do with your faith. You are working on your faith right now. Every day that you make a concerted effort, every time you make a concerted effort to humble your heart before God, to try to learn about God, to try to understand him a little more, that's your faith. You're building it. You're working on it. You know, I said, you know, this is the process. This is why we're here. This is why Jesus Christ came and died for our sins so that we could do this. He opened the door, so now you can go through this, and it means something. You're able to build the XP, the experience that you need to build. Anyway, I could keep going on. I could do the whole show 1 hour of just doing this. And I keep threatening to do that. Let me rephrase that. I don't keep threatening. I have kicked that idea around in the back of my head, especially now I've been doing the Daily Nationalist. Well, supposed to, the Daily Nationalist on Mondays and Friday. I've kicked around more than once just doing this for the whole show. This is what means something. I enjoy our other discussions. I do. But this is the one that has purpose as far as what I really care about. It really is. Anyway, like I said, I could go on. We got to wrap up on this note. I hope you got something out of it. I hope I didn't ramble and get off topic too much. Keep at it. I just keep at it. You're building your experience up. You know, where your faith is now is where it is. Don't, you know, nobody starts off at level 10 or whatever. Everybody got to start off at level 1. You may be level 2 or 3, maybe 5 or 6. I don't know. Don't get discouraged where you're at. You just got to keep putting the effort in. Keep trying to know him. Keep trying to learn. Keep at it. If you don't understand it and you can't wrap your mind around it, don't sweat it. As long as you keep putting the effort, you might understand it. You might grasp it years from now. It's the whole point. It's why God has given us this time on earth. We're going to wrap up again. I keep saying we're going to wrap up. This time we really are going to wrap up. Thank you again for joining us. I appreciate it. Hopefully I'll see you back here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.